Welcome to
Binary Dilemma.
A podcast that you listen to after binge listening, which is totally a thing, Taiwanese death metal. I'm Chris, Jazz Sequence on the Internet. I'm joined, as per usual, by Binary Gary, who's Gary in real life, and Allison, who is
Asparagus.
Allison Plus on the Internet. Asparagus?
Yeah, we can touch on that in a minute.
Cool. This is a show where, you can find us online, binaryjazz.us. There's other stuff of how to get in touch with us. Basically, somebody comes up with a topic, usually it's Allison, and presents it to Gary and I, and we have no idea what it is in advance or just in general. And we then spend most of the Zoom call trying to describe what it is and also getting sidetracked by other things that
that's inaccurate.
Really,
it is definitely not most. Yeah.
and then we just, I guess, buck around for 10 minutes at the end. Because we
have
listener questions. We would read your listener questions on the air.
Would love a listener question.
Over the air on the internet. We would read your listener questions if you're
on the line.
Instead, most of the time when we do get feedback, we end up reading spam, which is okay too.
So
not as cool.
Like, very, very worth noting, this is not a scripted show. Otherwise, I think we'd still be.
If this was our effort, if this was the script.
This is maximum effort.
Hey.
I don't know that I'd be into it. Like, I feel like there are podcasts that are scripted and produced, but I generally like a podcast where someone shows up and I'm like, well, I've got a microphone, perhaps some notes. Let's just see where it goes. And maybe even a clock. In our case, we have a clock that we don't look at until it's like, hey.
Until it's too late.
I'm about to shut you off, yeah.
The clock is actually a feature.
Is like sort of a speed chess where we each have a certain amount of time. And then once we use it up, it's just like, that's that.
We... Like 4 minutes in, Gary's muted. Sorry, you're out of time. Damn it.
Happens every week. Your stories besides people.
Do you want to hear about asparagus?
I read your Twitter thread.
Yes.
But
I think it was just two tweets.
I guess I just don't understand why it was asparagus and not like asparagary or something that like rhymed more or like.
I don't know. I was in high school and dumb.
Yeah.
So Chris, here's the deal. I had this teacher in high school, Miss Piernick is her name. I can't remember her first name. I never knew it. Wonderful health teacher.
One of our most loyal listeners.
Right. Assuming she's still with us. I wasn't that long ago. I was in high school. She must be. Although she seemed ancient at the time. She probably wasn't. She was probably
in her 30s.
30s. Yeah, I know. But I was in high school. So anyway, the first day of class, she was like, does anybody have any nicknames? And like the class was silent. She's like, really? Nobody has nicknames? Everybody always has a nickname. Like Michael's by Mike. Like still like crickets. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm a smart ass. So what's your nickname? I go by asparagus. So she writes that down in her book. And God bless her. Because then for the rest of the semester, we didn't have much homework, but when we did, I had to hand it in with asparagus Kovar written down on it. And then like whenever we had substitute teachers that would take roll, because Ms. Piernick, of course, knew us, so she just went down the roll sheet. But, you know, they'd be like, Jimmy Calhoun or whatever, asparagus Kovar. And like, that was the thing. So God bless Ms. Piernick. She was like, hey, smartass, come on. Been doing this a while, bring it. So I had to go buy asparagus for a semester because I was a smartass. So good.
I appreciate the commitment and I appreciate her doubling down and being like, all right.
I know.
There are probably so few things that bring a teacher joy, just in general with like so much pressure that's put on them and like, you know, trying to get these kids to actually learn a thing or two.
Yeah.
That demanding one of your students be known and referred to as asparagus has to be up there with like, you know, top.
I disagree though. Like, because in her case, she you could tell she took joy in teaching. Like she loved the kids that were smart asses and she you know, I mean, there were no trouble. I can't remember a time in her class where like someone got thrown out of class, which wasn't like in my school, like people got thrown out of class pretty often. I got thrown out of class pretty often. But she, I mean, she just, you know, like if the class was feeling mayhem that day, well, she harnessed that mayhem and we still learned stuff. And I guess in health too, you always have the option of like, all right, let's tone it down. Or I'm showing gross pictures again. Like that's always the threat, right? So I don't know that she wielded that very much. But I mean, like she had us all singing about like, how to identify cancer warning signs. I mean, she was great. She really, really brought game for a class that should have been miserable and made it good. So shout out to Ms. Piernik.
Yeah, I hope that she is listening to you today.
From your favorite produce student.
Yeah. do you eat asparagus?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had it 2 nights ago. We had it as a side. And then the next night we had quiche with asparagus in it. So 2 days back to back. I love asparagus.
We're not doing eggs. And I feel like eggless quiche is difficult, but I haven't tried
Tofu.
But yeah, they're not. It's like our house and dietary restrictions. It's just like,
you can't do tofu because soy?
I'm supposed to watch my soy intake, which I mean, I can watch it rise, I guess, is also one way of looking at that.
Brand. Yeah, it's like watching, like observing it, or is like limiting it. I feel like watching is like a pretty broad
mandate. It's not like a hard no. It's more just like, just be careful that you're not having it for every meal and it's not your sole protein and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be a lot.
Yeah, I didn't think about quiche being like egg. So sadly,
delicious. It's like egg and cheese. It's just all the good things.
Yeah.
And yeah, in a pie crust. Like it's so. Yeah. I don't know. I'm assuming someone was like, oh, yeah, for sure. I'm assuming the person that came up with it was like, damn, you know, it'd be good. A breakfast pie.
Like, I mean,
yeah, that's kind of a comfort food. Anyway,
pie for breakfast is okay in our house.
Yeah. I'm down with that too. Key lime pie.
Usually pies.
Great breakfast food.
Like there's pumpkin pie. Pumpkins are healthy. Or it's like a fruit pie of some variety, and fruit is healthy. And it's just I mean, what's the contextual difference? What's the contextual difference between between pie and like, I don't know, a breakfast baked good of some other variety, like a jelly donut or something.
Hey man, you're
first, a pie is basically a breakfast cereal.
Yeah.
Because it's in a bowl.
Yeah.
Which is
edible bowl. Not only is it in a bowl, it's better environmental stewardship because I'm eating the bowl. Yeah. Not only have you convinced me, but now I'm going to have pie tomorrow for breakfast, or perhaps after this call, I may have to go acquire a pie. Actually, Ron is going to grocery shopping. Hang on. Can you get a pie?
Yeah, we make a vegan quiche, but it is a lot of tofu.
And is it like the silken tofu?
No, we just blend it. We use our high speed blender and blend the tofu with like stuff to make it. Yeah.
Also tofu.
And asparagus.
I think we still have some asparagus. I don't know why I looked at my phone for asparagus, but I'm pretty sure we still have some.
I feel like we should throw in something else random for Rhonda to get, just to throw her off the scent.
I really expect to hear back, like either it's already on the list or for what?
Yeah. One of the two. For what nefarious purposes do you need a pie?
Yeah. Or perhaps what kind, but I'm actually less interested in that.
You're like, look, just the one that looks the best.
Yeah. I mean, go with what movie, like, you know, I don't know, whatever's in bloom.
Whatever's in bloom.
Yeah.
Because pies bloom.
It's like a pie tree.
Yeah.
I think I famously have said several times that winter kicked my ass and I was so thrilled then things started blooming here. That will continue to be a theme, I guess, because I'm about to talk about it again. So the azaleas, we have pink and white azaleas that have just been like amazing. I'm not a flower guy. I don't even know how to name flowers generally, but these, I like look at them and I'm just like enamored by these things. These bushes, they're just so vibrant, and previously were just green and just exploded. And they're it's like the whole bush, you can't even see like where the green was. It's great. I've taken that as like a phrase that I use, like, you know, like referring to things in bloom, just this, like, I don't know, like it feels like a word that means different things to me now than it did, yay, 45 days ago. It has movement. It has like direction and growth. It's definitely more than just like, oh, it's blue.
Is that because North Carolina has seasons, perhaps?
Oh, perhaps, yes. I'm actually certain that's what it is. Like the flowering dogwood has flowers. Are you fucking kidding me right now? It's so good.
A lot of those blooming trees too, like they bloom early and then that's it. That's their thing. That's the thing they do for the whole year.
Yeah, yep. That's what the dogwood does. Yeah. When we moved in here in July, the dogwood was there and you could see like little buds or whatever. And so I frantically Googled, I'm like, when does this thing bloom? Right. And we found out like, you know, April, May. We're like, damn it, we missed it. So that's kind of, I mean, I won't say it's been circling the calendar, but it's just right outside the kitchen window. So we often have this discussion, like, I can't wait till that thing blooms. And so now, like when it started, there were like two or three, and it was, I mean, it was like, have you looked at the dogwood like this afternoon? It was like that often, that thing.
We have our apricot tree has branches that go right in front of our bedroom window. When that's blooming, we can just look outside and the thing is that none of us in this house really like apricots. So apricot trees are really early bloom, at least ours have been. So like we kind of subversively mm-hmm. hope that like it's pretty and it's bloom. We like to see it bloom, but then we hope for like a really early freeze or a really late freeze, I guess, to kill all the flowers so that it doesn't actually turn into apricots. Like give us the flowers and then like snow and kill all the apricots.
Oh my god.
That's perfect. Cause it happened like, because the first year we were here, like we got tons and tons of apricots and like we don't pick them because we don't want them. Nobody else picks them. And so the squirrels pick them and then they just drop these apricot bits and pieces onto the deck and it's really nasty and it sits out in the heat, especially in the summer, and it just grows. So you need to pick them one way or the other, even if you're not going to eat them, which is like really like a pain in the ass to do if you're not going to eat them. So one year we got far less of an apricot harvest because it snowed after it bloomed. And you're like, that's the thing. That's what should happen every year.
Do you have here? There's like a nonprofit that will go around basically picking fruit for you.
I don't know.
Basically what they do is they have volunteers, and if you have fruit trees or whatever that you just need care and someone to take care of them, and then they'll pick and they'll give you a third. The volunteers that pick them get a third, and then they donate the last third to a food bank. But I'm sure
it's so cool.
Anyway, yeah, I really like it because I have a few friends that have either fruit tree, like it's a you know, a gift and a curse, because even if you like the fruit, it's like way too much of one thing for like one family often.
We will use the apples we get from the apple tree. One way or another, we will use them. But like we have like a pear tree. None of us really like pears. Although I decided last year that we should just pick the pears and dry them, like dried pears. Mm-hmm. Because we do that with a lot of the apples. Like whatever we don't actually eat of the apples, we can just dry them. We don't have our own dehydrator. That was on the list of things to get this year. But we will do that. And then
you mean if I send dehydrators? I used to sell dehydrators. I have lots of opinions.
I will ping you about dehydrators. Yes.
Happy to chat through dehydration.
And we have another apricot tree. We used to have another, we have one pear tree, and I think we have another pear tree. And then we also have another apricot tree, but those two don't, the other extras don't produce as much, but we usually get some pears and we get hopefully lots of apples. Our apples are really, really small. So they're not like, you know, like somewhere between like a crab apple and like a, just a normal, but small, like Granny Smith sort of thing.
Have we hit topic today?
No.
No. I have a topic.
I think it's the topic time.
Topic time. The topic, which I'm not quite sure if I'm pronouncing right, but I've been pronouncing it as now that I've confused myself. Hiramiki. Yeah, there we go. Hiramiki.
Spell that for me, please.
H-I-R-A-M-E-K-I.
H-I-R-A-M-E-K-I.
Yeah.
Wow.
It could also be Hiramiki. I just feel like Hiramiki sounds better.
Mm-hmm. It looks
Japanese in nature.
It looks Japanese. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. In which case,
did you see that, Chris? We said that.
Hiramiki.
And she gave a knowing glance. It is not Japanese.
Didn't see that.
Rug's getting pulled out from under us today. Watch out.
I didn't say anything, though.
Speed bump.
Yeah, and I don't know about pronunciation because I've only seen it written, so.
Well, if it's Japanese, you pronounce all of the vowels in the same way all the time, so it would be Hiramiki.
Tyler and I had this conversation the other day about Hiramiki. About mispronouncing words. And I said, like, he said something and I corrected pronunciation on it. He's like, man, I'm like, dude, like, if you learned that word from a book and never heard it pronounced, like wear that as a badge of honor that you have all these, like, this great vocabulary because of your reading. That's rad. So.
Yeah, Aaron, I'm watching Critical Role with Aaron and Matt Mercer pronounces a lot of things incorrectly because obviously he's only ever heard those words or read those words and not heard them out loud, because it's like obscure words that you wouldn't hear out loud because it's like, I need to think of something and I'm not going to. But it's the sort of things that you would read in fantasy books. Like you read it, but you don't hear it. And it always, she always rolls her eyes and then like makes fun of him because she's very, very attentive to everything like that. So I like to rub it in a little bit too. It's good. But Hiramiki is a second dynasty composer. A multi-talented individual who wrote poetry and painted and composed songs in early dynastic Japan. Also,
it's actually a kind of construction adhesive. Comes in a tube. You pipe it out. Put your whatever you need on it. Adhese it to the floor or the wall or whatever. Adhere it. That's the word. It was in there somewhere. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Also a tasty sandwich filling. Doubles down there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see the tasty.
Sounds like marshmallow.
Sort of like a Nutella kind of thing. Yeah.
Saltier.
Yeah. Fish paste.
It's a savory, it resembles fish paste, but is completely animal free. It's vegan, right?
Seaweed paste.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, that sounds horrific, doesn't it? So bad.
Put it on your tofu. You put it on your tofu sandwiches, seaweed paste. I had a friend in high school who was becoming a vegetarian in high school, and her mom didn't know what to do with that information, and so was attempting to make her a sandwich one day, and just literally like two slices of bread and a slice of tofu was the sandwich, and she's like, what?
Comes from a place of love, but
yep,
there.
Tofu sandwich.
I'm thinking about that and imagining, like, okay, I put a tofu sandwich and Cheez-Its in your lunch because I didn't want to give you goldfish crackers. Like, it's just like, it's almost like, okay. All right. It's just not quite there.
And you could put the
Cheez-Its. Did not stick the landing.
You could put the Cheez-Its in the sandwich. That would be something.
Oh man. Yes. Potato chips of any sort, like in a sandwich. Oh, salt and vinegar potato chips in a sandwich. Or a nice.
Are you going to ask Rhonda to get a salt and vinegar potato chips now?
Nope.
She already have them.
Nope. No, I'm fine imagining them. I'm just going to throw some pickles on my sandwich today.
I'm fine with imagining.
I've never been hugely into the salt and vinegar chips. I got more into them when I was in England because it was more of a thing. And also, there's very strange, well,
how long were you in England?
A semester, so like 5 months.
Got it.
5 months.
Okay.
Long enough to adapt to some of the behaviors, I suppose.
Yeah, like I started calling my pants trousers, and that was it.
I didn't wear anything other than jeans, so that was pretty easy.
Yeah. Were you vegetarian then?
I was going back and forth at the time. And while I was in England, I was in a fourth period where I was no longer vegetarian. But then okay. I kind of bounced back sometime after that.
So really where I'm going with this is, do you get fish and chips?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the verdict?
Excellent. Yeah.
All right.
Would do. Yeah. 10/10.
Yep.
Would recommend.
Yeah.
Are you pro or anti fish and chips, Gary?
Oh, pro. Okay. Pro. I'm actually a big fan of like fish in general, all kinds of fish. Charlotte likes salmon a lot.
There is.
Oh, okay.
The thing that I learned while I was there, I mean, it would have been really difficult to be vegetarian there. I think I figured that out like within the first couple of weeks, and I was like, well, this is going to be a problem. So whatever, I'll just do it and then I can switch back later or something. And I wasn't like, if I don't see how it's made, then it's okay to eat phase of my vegetarianism. Mm.
Sure.
So like things like ground meat, so hamburgers and like sausage and things, or things like, I don't have to think about like how those things, like the animal that it comes from, because I don't see it in front of me. So I'm just going to just pretend that that stuff doesn't exist and just eat the thing. And
from the sausage tree.
Yeah, exactly. And like meat pies and like sausage.
Right next to like things. Vines of Dyson spheres.
meat pies and sausage pastry things. Meat pastries are a big deal. Frequently yeah. found in like the open market stuff, and yeah.
I had a thing for meat pies when I was working at web dev. Like that was my lunch. I'm not sure why. I would get like frozen meat pies. I guess because they were cheap and they were, I don't know, whatever. I loved sitting on the porch and having a meat pie when it was like 100 degrees outside.
That's maybe the one thing that working remotely doesn't let you, I don't know, not that I miss, but that like I like scoping out other people's lunch choices. And so mm-hmm. like I miss that experience when I work.
Were you there at WDS when I created the lunchroom, but I did it with the wrong prefix and then it couldn't be changed? No. I did something silly and I it was like I did it with like an underscore instead of a dash or vice versa, whichever it was. And I kind of intentionally did it wrong because, you know, mayhem's fun. But then like in Slack, like you couldn't rename it to replace the slash or the dash with the underscore or vice versa, like it was broken. So like whenever Brad would mention that room, he would mention that Gary broke the channel name and it couldn't be fixed. I'm not sure he was actually like upset about it, but I do know that he really appreciated that it was broken and wanted everyone to know that I was the one that broke it, which was fine. I mean, it's actually accurate.
What was the purpose of the lunchroom? Was it just a place to chat?
To show pictures of your lunch, like literally that. Like, here's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich I made. I often was like the only voice in there for days at a time, which I was fine with, because that also, like, there were times where I would like copy and paste the photo from the previous day if I was doing leftovers, you know, just because I thought it was, I enjoy, like keep Gary happy. Give him like, give him an empty channel. He can talk to himself, apparently.
I mean, that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the guy that, like, you know, had to keep a dummy busy, turn it over like 6 or 7 times. All right.
In fact, coincidentally, Hiramekki actually means an empty room in which you talk to yourself. That's what it means.
I have problems with reverb. Not me personally, but like listening to reverb. Like, it really bothers me when there's an artificial reverb. And I mean, I feel like you can't do music without putting some in there, because like just dry sound is like, ooh, that's a bit too honest, you know? Like every instrument and voice. Maybe not every, but damn near every instrument and voice. But then like if you apply like reverb, there's a point where it's like, oh, that's too much. But you pull back and you go, that's a bit too honest. Like there's actually not a line. There's not a balance that works. And I don't think it's possible.
That's, I'm fascinated by your phrasing of too honest. Like too crisp or too?
No, like too honest. Like you, like someone takes like a photo and you look at the photo in the hallway, you're like, oh, that's great. But like, you don't like walk up to it and like look at like the blemishes on someone's face. Like, you know, like it's, I don't want to say it's too zoomed in, but it's like a little like, maybe we could have photoshopped that a bit, or just don't stand so damn close. Like that's, yeah, I feel like, but there's a point for that. So I like when recording, I like very honest sound, because you can hear it, listen to a take and be like, oh yeah, that'll work. Or no, that's not going to work. Like we need to get that again, because there's that weird thing that's not going to line up with, you know, like you went flat, or, well, we could fix that. Or like that, I don't know, that part, like that little glitch in your voice or whatever it was is fine, but that one's not. So we got to redo that thing, you know? And I feel like having an honest mic makes that super easy, but then you don't actually want it to be that honest in the mix, because you want it to blend and fit in, and reverb is like, I think, the natural place everybody goes. And I mean, of course it is. I mean, where you're not used to listening to someone like right up, like, you know, actually, was that the microphone? Was it?
Yeah,
that was a difference. Okay.
That was definitely.
I wasn't sure. Yeah. Right. Sorry. Yeah. Well, yeah. So you're not used to people being like right there, like in your ears, so close. And so that reverb gives it space, but it also is manufactured. That's what it is. It's manufactured space, because the space wasn't really there. We're approximating this container that didn't exist. Hiramekki.
I don't have that problem nearly as much. And I feel like it's because the music that I make isn't manufactured. Because you added the synthesizer too, but it's a totally different thing if you added to synthesizer. Because then you're doing it to just give it some room. Then you're just giving it to like to make for the manufactured space. But a lot of the stuff I do, like, I don't necessarily put reverb on everything. Why would I? Some things have it, like some things sort of have a resonance that is similar to reverb, like as part of the sound. But yeah,
I think it's equating it to like if I think about like a brass instrument, like a trumpet, and think about like when a trumpet stops, like it doesn't just stop, like the sound doesn't just stop. Right, like it.
But when an 808 stops, when an 808 stops, it stops.
Stops. I know. So maybe it is. Maybe it is recording physical. You're right, because like synthesized music, like yeah, of course, like it's actually part of the effect to be so dry and just
so when there is reverb, it's intentional. It's an intentional choice, and then you make a choice to cut it or to build it or to do whatever you're going to do with it, reverse it. Yeah.
I'm really big on, I don't use it at all, ever. And not intentionally, just because I forget. I don't know why, I guess I forget, and I'm about to talk about how much I love it. So I haven't forgotten about it completely. I love when you're listening to music and there's like an effective use of silence in a spot. Like, especially when it's like just a tinge longer than you thought it would be. Like that's like a, that tease, I guess, is just so wonderful and effective. Yes, that's it.
That's and that is Hiromeki. Now we get to learn what Hiromeki actually is.
Hiromeki is a type of art. The Japanese translation is... Is actually splash of inspiration. And it's basically like random blobs, colorful splashes, smears, like...
Impressionist, sort of?
Take like black ink and like draw what you see. So it's the same thing as like... I don't know, kind of like when you're looking at clouds and like seeing, finding shapes, but it's like actual art. So if you see a blob and you're like, well, I think it looks like a rabbit. And then you draw and like kind of ink in a rabbit over the colorful splotch.
I feel like I did this in like kindergarten.
Oh, totally. I'm doing it. Like I did it this week and then I discovered there was a name for it. So I was like, here we are.
Yeah. That's good.
In fact, there is a project that we did in kindergarten or preschool where we got like a blob of ink or paint on a piece of paper and we were supposed to blow through a straw to spread the paint on the page. And then the idea was you're going to do that. You're going to paint, you're going to draw whatever the thing is. Except I blew so hard through the straw that I passed out.
Oh no.
That's the cutest art story ever.
And the thing is that I was so frustrated when I came back that they wouldn't let me finish because I was not done with the paint. I did not want to like leave it the way it was.
Oh. Yeah.
Tragic.
What do you think that would be? What would the musical equivalent of that be? Would it just be like banging out some notes and then being like, how does all this work together?
There is what's it called? There was an experimental music composer who wrote, I should preface this by saying in experimental music, you typically don't write music. You sort of like conceptualize the instructions and then leave it to the performers to interpret them. Candy Apple Revision is the name of the thing that I'm thinking of. And basically what Candy Apple Revision was, is it was like in the key of G or whatever. And that's literally it. Like it starts with a note and then everybody just plays whatever happens after that note. And then it finishes when it finishes. And that would be the musical equivalent.
Hiromeki. When I was in college, we had, I worked at the auditorium and had to do like, you know, sound setup, all kind of stuff. And there was this, we would always have like the music department bring in musicians. And it was always very like, you know, what you would expect at a liberal arts school and, you know, not super exciting. But somebody brought in this trombone player and she was like, hi. I need eight speakers. I need eight, like, I need an octophonic setup. How many amps do you have? Can we make this happen? And like, for those of us working in the auditorium, we're like, wait, like we, what? Like we get to do weird, cool stuff? Hell yeah. So she had this deal. And so we set up like eight speakers in the room. We did it in a smaller auditorium, which was circular shaped. And so there were like two speakers. She was at the front, so really nine sources of sound, and then eight all the way around. And they came off, like we got enough amps and they were like all mismatched. It was all like this like conglomerated like duct tape nest. And it came into this board and it was like, careful with that cable, don't wiggle that one, we'll lose those two speakers. I mean, it was like, it was barely held together. And then she takes this microphone, she clips it onto her trombone. And it's like, you know, like the little skinny like headphone wire. and it's like 200 feet long. She runs that, like, we tape it to the ground. She runs it all the way back to the soundboard where she sets up her computer that has like this octopus plug coming out that's supplying the sound for each of these. So she would play and different notes would trigger different things on different speakers. And like she could play, like she played an E and like this would happen over here and then like this speaker would respond. But it was like for this, like, and I wish I could see it again. I should probably Google it. I bet there's a performance somewhere online, but I actually want to sit in the middle and experience it. Like for this, like squared in like understanding of like what music was at that point in my life, that she was like playing with music, but doing it like in front of a crowd, and that there were going to be things that didn't work. And that was just part of the experience, was actually more liberating than I could handle at that point in my life. Now I think I would absolutely love it. But at the time I was just like, this is so fucking weird. And it was. And I hope she's still doing it. I'm going to Google it and figure it out afterwards, because it
reminds me of Imaginary Landscapes number 4, which is a piece by John Cage that was written for, I want to say, 12 radios. And it is actual sheet music and it does have a time signature. It's obviously, like, I saw it performed by music students at my college, and there was a point where they lost where they were in the music, but you can't really see that or hear that, because it just literally, like, the instructions are like, turn the radio to such and such station and hold it there for, and like turning the volume up and down for like, and that's it. So like wherever you are in the world, it's going to sound different, and it's always going to be, because it's different radio stations, different frequencies are in use in that area. And obviously when it was written, when John Cage wrote it, probably there were fewer frequencies that were in use, because there are fewer radio stations, or had they had smaller broadcast areas or whatever. So it would have been a lot more white noise. But now we perform it, you're going to hit a lot of different, like, radio stations. Are going to get in between the radio stations. You're going to have competing things. It's like, it was magical. And there were parts where it worked, and you could hear the sound sort of sweeping across from one side to the other. And it was just the most amazing thing in the world, just to have this like wave of sound going back and forth between these radios. And yeah, and they're all different types of radios, like boom boxes and like, you know, clock radios and like everything. Yeah. It's experimental music is fun, man.
I had a question, but we don't have enough time for it.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.